Happy Hours, the exclusive HR podcast by NHRDN in partnership with Timber Media. Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.
Hello everyone, a very warm welcome to yet another episode of Happy Hours. I'm Lionel Paul David, Vice President of NHRDN Chennai Chapter, and I'm your host for today. We have with us a globally renowned Indian business leader who has been a growth innovator, management thinker, and leadership coach all rolled into one. Mr. Shiv Kumar, or Shiv, as he is popularly known, is currently the Group Executive President, Corporate Strategy at Aditya Birla Group. In the year 2000, the Hindu Business Line marked him as the future leader to watch out for, and to prove the prophecy right, he won the Best CEO Award in 2011 and has several honors to his name, including IIMA Lifetime Contribution to Management, Asian Leader Award, Distinguished Alumnus Award from both IIT Madras and IIM Calcutta, to mention a few. Shiv's past leadership roles include being the chairperson and the chief executive officer at PepsiCo India, prior to which he was the CEO for emerging markets at Nokia. In today's podcast, I look forward to chatting with him about strategy and leadership. Thanks for joining us today and a very warm welcome to Happy Hours, Shiv. How are you?
Thank you very much. Thank you, NHRD, for having me on the show.
Thank you. It's our pleasure. Our show has two segments. The first one, which is Bottoms Up, where we would like to explore some dimensions of the theme for this podcast of strategy and leadership, where we look forward to hearing your perspectives and learning from your experiences, Shiv.
Yeah, thank you very much for that. Yeah.
Bottoms Up.
Bottoms Up. Okay, so the first question I have for you, you have spent half your 3-decade-long work experience as a CXO. So I would like to hear your views on strategy and leadership in the age of disruptions. Today, we see successful organizations are those who deftly turn these changes around them into opportunities, like, for example, Amazon competing with Walmart and Tesla with Google. We see it took about 20 years for Amazon to challenge Walmart, but it only took 7-8 years for Uber to challenge the best in the business combined. So the compression of disruption on how it is challenging the industries on one side and changes in the consumer expectations and employee expectations on the other side is there. So how do you view the evolution of strategy today from the lens of your rich 3-decade experience? Importantly, when you look at the pace of the disruptions around us, and how has leadership evolved alongside this rapid change in business strategy over this timeline, Shiv?
Yeah. So if you go back, I think the study of strategy really came into its own sometime around the 1950s and 60s. There was this wonderful book written by Peter Drucker on the concept of the corporation, which was done in 1946, I think. And then you had Iger Ansoff, then you had Bruce Henderson of BCG with the 2x2 matrix in 1963, if I'm not wrong. And so then a number of models came into being then. I think in the old days, strategy was a very deliberate process. When I say the old days, I'd say till maybe the 1990s, from 1960s to 1990s. It was deliberate. You spent a lot of time thinking through your strategy. It took time. Then you took a lot of time implementing the strategy. And then you took a lot of time to evaluate the strategy. Strategies did not change rapidly. And each firm in the industry had a different strategy, to be fair. Then you had, I think, Porter, who came in with generic strategies. And then you had a plethora of books which started talking about In Search of Excellence. New buzzwords came to the table. Excellence, re-engineering, etc., etc. And then there was confusion between what is operational excellence, what is process excellence, and what is strategy. Today, I think all that is not true. Today, we see a very rapidly changing world. Today, we see digital almost pervasive in every single industry. We see the concept of capabilities almost pervasive in every single industry. The clock speed is going up dramatically. So the earlier model of product, market, geography, process, capabilities, advantages, execution is all compressed into very, very thin time. And in the past, leaders had time. Leaders had time to reflect. Leaders had time to gather information, etc. Today, leaders don't have time. They have to learn on the fly. They have to implement on the fly. They have to course correct on the fly. That's the kind of changes which have happened. In the last 50 years, while strategy has changed from being deliberate to emergent and to the future strategy, digital has spread across the world. Now, anywhere in the world, you can get information. as a result of which most organizations have gone into what I call a matrix organization structure, where the biggest leadership capability is to influence the matrix as opposed to order the matrix or command the matrix. So I think influence has become very, very important for leadership over the last 40, 50 years as strategy has changed. I think very clearly strategy departments have come into fashion, have gone out of fashion. But I think one thing is clear, that companies which do well are clearly far more focused than companies which don't do well. The last point you asked me about was time. In a digital world, time has become exceedingly important. If you look at people today, they want to order something and they want that delivered at their doorstep in the next 24 hours. So if you can deliver it in the next 24 hours free of cost, people buy you. Otherwise, if you are going to charge them, they go to some other site or some other brand. I think value of time has become exceedingly important right now and almost in every single dimension. So at one level, we can say that consumers and customers have become extremely impatient as more and more information about products and services has become freely available. So digital has been the death of the middleman in many an industry. And if the middleman does not add value, whether in a digital world or a physical world, then that product, that service, that company is in trouble. So this is how I believe strategy has evolved and leadership has evolved over the last 50 years. It's a simple 6-minute answer for you, but that's what I could think of.
Thanks so much, Shiv. You've laid the ground for the next parts of our conversation. Like, you've kind of put it very nicely in terms of talking about the compression of the strategic dimensions and the need for leaders to remain agile and their role as an influencer, which is rising up today. And you also touched upon the aspect of adding value.
Happy Hours, the exclusive HR podcast by NHRDN in partnership with Timber Media. Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.
So you have been a very hands-on people manager yourself, and people who have worked with you have often spoken about your efforts in building teams and about your focus on creating a positive organization culture. On the other side, as a business leader, do you see HR as a business enabler or the CHRO as a capable CEO ally? Because you just talked about adding value. So I would like to hear about your experience and your views in the context of a recent research which I read, which is by McKinsey, and I quote, "The research found that the CEO worldwide considered human capital as their Achilles heel, which is quite concerning to know, and also they've ranked HR as only their 8th or 9th most important function in their companies." So what's your take on this, Shiv?
Yeah, I would say I think the world has moved along. If there's one thing I would say over a period of time, and this is more led by American companies, many companies have become hire and fire companies, as a result of which you really don't value people, and hence you get rid of very committed people. One of the things I think organizations are taking for granted is a committed employee. You can get many capable people, but you can get very few committed people. That would be my first input to you. Second input to you would be, as time has progressed, most businesses have become what I call a two-person cockpit. The two-person cockpit of a plane being the pilot, who is seen as the CEO, and the co-pilot, who is seen as the CFO. So everything is either strategy or execution or a focus on numbers. That's what's happened. I am more akin to the old plane, which had three people in the cockpit. The pilot, which was the CEO, absolutely right. The co-pilot, which was the CFO, absolutely right. But more important, you had a navigator in that cockpit. And in my book, the navigator is the CHRO. It's the CHRO who sets the true north and the value direction. And I think there is no business in the world which can run purely on machines or purely without people or without the commitment of people. I don't think that ever is possible. If you look at all the research which is going on right now, I just read a Gallup report last week, which said that engagement has dropped 200 basis points in a COVID year. Before this, engagement was at 22% globally. Imagine, there are 78% of the people who are not engaged. It was 22%, it's now dropped to 20. Simply stated, engagement is, do the employees have heart in the business? I think a lot of us think that employees come in only for money. That's not true. Employees come for meaning, employees come to work to be appreciated. Employees come to work because they have good colleagues at work, and employees come because they can progress their ideas at work. As long as the business can focus on that, I think they'll be fine. I think there is no end to engagement, and I think every CEO must walk the talk and try to get to know as many people as possible. The trouble with most CEOs is they just know their management team and maybe a level below that. And I have always advocated traveling to the market, meeting as many people as possible, traveling to the factories, meeting as many people as possible. And I have made it a point through all my stints to stay connected with as many employees as possible. That's the only way a CEO can feel the heat of the market, can get to know the truth. So there is no substitute to being people connected. And if McKinsey has rated it number 8, I would think it's a gross injustice to the real people who actually deliver the business results.
Thanks for those insights, Shiv. Especially, you've eloquently put it, the navigator who sets the direction of the organization culture. And you also mentioned the Gallup report on engagement during COVID. And my next question is about the current COVID crisis with the massive scale of the outbreak and its sheer unpredictability, which has added to the challenges faced by businesses at large and their leadership teams. So my question to you is, how can leaders help their teams and organizations triumph over adversity? So what has been your approach during the crisis? If given a chance to rewind time, would you have taken the decisions differently? So based on your experiences, what mantra would you suggest leaders in order to successfully traverse these turbulent times?
Yeah, the first thing I would say is every crisis is too good an opportunity for you to lose. I think every time there is a crisis, well-managed businesses tend to do better. The reason being, well-managed businesses have better processes, but more important, they have very good people who have resilience, who are able to learn faster and who are able to react faster. So a crisis is a very good opportunity for a well-run company. I would say in this particular crisis, we've been hit with something very peculiar. The number one concern for most people has been their family. And after that has been other employees. So I think connecting with family, taking care of the family has been absolutely crucial and absolutely, you know, the key agenda for every single employee. On my part, what I've done is in December, I did video calls with about 50 families, people who report to me directly and people who are two drops to me, generally telling them how we've done, thanking the individual for his contribution or her contribution, thanking the family for their support. Now I'm doing the same calls at the end of June. I've just finished about 6-7 calls this week, and I'll do the balance 40-50 next week. Through the crisis, what we did was, as a business in textiles as well as in the strategy team, we had daily calls. Every day people are updating us about the business, whether it was UK, whether it was Turkey, whether it was China, whether it was Indonesia, whether it was the Philippines. So in the first 6 months, we had a daily update in the afternoon through which we were running the business almost on a 24-hour basis. That kept the energy up, but more important, it kept the learning up a lot. I think as you look at any crisis, every crisis is an opportunity, as I said. I think when you enter a crisis, as well as when you exit a crisis, you must think of three scenarios. What can be an optimistic way out? What is a pessimistic way out or a pessimistic plan? And what is a realistic plan? And I would say, as leaders, build your cost structure on the pessimistic side every time you're in a crisis. I have seen many businesses fail because they build their cost structure on the optimistic plan. And the optimistic plan never happens. And if you do not communicate with your people in a time of crisis, then they'll end up like rabbits in front of a headlight. So I think the key role for a leader is to communicate frequently, and to unite the team. As long as the leader does that in a crisis, I think he or she will win big time.
Great. Thanks for emphasizing on the simple but largely missed factor of communication. And you've given a very nice example of how you're doing it, of walking your talk. And I like the idea about not only having an optimistic plan, but also having a pessimistic and a realistic plan, and sticking to see if your pessimistic plan, do you have a good way out? For me, your active involvement in several mentoring initiatives and your participation as a guest faculty and also being a member of the Board of Governors for several leading institutions signifies your passion for grooming young minds. I've also heard that as a leader, you have ensured that you engage with young talent regularly through one-on-one sessions, and the knowledge sharing you do through your weekly learning articles and your book summaries. It's all had a profound impact on several young managers. So given your active involvement with the young professionals, what advice or tips you would give them, especially the young HR professionals who aspire to make it big as the next CXO?
Yeah, I would say if the advice is for HR professionals, number one, I would say is learn. You know, if you know something does not mean you'll be successful. But if you don't know something, you can almost be sure that you'll fail. So knowledge does not guarantee success, but lack of knowledge guarantees failure, number one. So please learn, please be up to date, please do everything possible to make yourself one of the best learned people in your craft. Number two, if you look at the future, and the World Economic Forum said this, that the capabilities required for the future are creativity, critical thinking skills, and complex problem solving skills. So whatever you're doing, ensure that you have a focus on these three. Third, I would say is, remember, HR is not an island on its own. It has to work with the business. In the last few years, we have confused the living daylights out of people by splitting HR into talent acquisition, HRBP, this, that, etc. HR finally is about people. It's about the energy of the people. It's about the engagement of the people. It's about the emotion of the people. And people work best when they feel that there is a team commitment. So whatever you're doing as an HR manager, build teams. And I would say take risks. Take risks on people, bet on them, and you'll be surprised that when you take risks on people, calculated risks, people end up proving you wrong and people end up delivering much more than you can ever think of. Those would be the four things that I would really say that HR managers of the future should think about.
Thanks a lot, Shiv. It was wonderful listening to the rich insights you shared. And with that, we come to the close of the first segment. And I'm sure all our listeners will have enough takeaways from what you have shared in this segment. Now, we move on to our next section, which is rapid fire. So I'll share a few statements to you, and I would look forward to hearing your views on that.
The rapid fire round.
The first statement is the war for talent.
The war for talent will continue. I don't think it'll ever stop. As new industries come up, you'll find yourself being challenged to keep your good people. So it's a perennial war. It is a never-ending war.
Hybrid HR department of robots and humans working together.
It's a complete possibility. We already see that. You already have bots doing a lot of work in terms of settlement of distributor claims, etc. So robots will work 24/7. They don't need a rest. And I think you'll have new policies, which will be about interface between robots and human beings.
And what's your take on standing for yourself rather than the institution?
I think there are industries where standing for yourself or doing what is right for yourself helps. Like if you're an investment banker, you're a trader, you are a creative person, you are a chef. Then when you stand for yourself, the institution builds itself around you. But in 95% of the cases, the institution matters. So in the institution, success is your success. So you must always work for the institution first. It is like saying a soldier in the army who defends India, is he, you know, fighting only for himself or is he fighting for the country? He's fighting for the country and protecting you and me. And hence, everybody who works for an institution must think about the institution first.
Thanks for those quick nuggets of wisdom. You're a person who comfortably dons multiple hats. So from the choices I share, I would like you to pick your personal favorite hat or the avatar that you enjoy the most. So speaker versus author.
Speaker, any day.
Bangalore versus Mumbai.
Bangalore any day because that's my hometown. But Mumbai is the most professional city in this country.
Okay, and mentor versus faculty.
Always mentor, because in being a mentor, you can guide somebody. Faculty, you just teach or you engage, but the results might not be there for you to see. But with a mentor, you can see the results.
Thanks for those quick responses, Shiv. I had a good time hosting you, and I'm sure all our listeners enjoyed it like I did. On behalf of NHRDN, I thank you from the bottom of my heart for taking time to join us in this chat.
It's been my pleasure, NHRD. It's always a pleasure. And all the very best, because I personally believe HR managers are absolutely crucial for companies to succeed. All the best, folks. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Shiv. Thanks, everyone who listened to this episode of Happy Hours. If you liked our show, do share it with your friends and share your feedback with us. This is Lionel Paul signing off and see you soon in another episode. Thank you.
Happy Hours, the exclusive HR podcast by NHRDN in partnership with Timber Media. Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.